Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
Man, I can understand how it might be kind
of
hard.
I am here in the studio of, I'm going to try and say it, and then she's going to say it properly, as it is her own name, Jeanne Mazzuero.
It's very good, Jeanne Mazzuero.
Excellent. And you are an English-born artist, but of Italian
family, yes. Yeah.
And tell me a bit about the evolution of your work, if you can say it in a few words, because I was thinking that, you know, people describe your work in sort of cosmic, using cosmic language and looking like galaxies. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking possibly that being born in England, raised in Italy, you know, you had an idea of the bigger picture or being outside from an early age.
Yes, that's very interesting. The thing about Italy, I spent my first 5 years in Italy, in the northern part, the Piemonte, and the beauty of the landscape. You know, one would lie on one's back on the grass and look up at the sky and the clouds, you know, and the trees. And I'm sure those are the best memories, you know, the sort of core of my work. And then, of course, coming to England, you know, in a way, I love the northern sky too, you know, the clouds filled with light. So whatever moves me that I see in the natural world, I try to translate it into something, some images that will make sense as paintings or drawings.
Mm-hmm. And you went to the Slade. What led you to art?
Oh, I quite as a very young teenager, I was loved painting and, you know, doing things like that. And I went to a convent school where there was a very, very fine, most interesting woman. I'm sure she was a good role model for me. Called Margaret Nicholson. I mean, she had been part of the group around Duncan Grant and all these, you know, sort of. She very much travelled, very, very clever, cultivated woman. And she took an interest in me because when I first went to school, clearly I couldn't speak English and, you know, I was regarded a little bit as a curiosity. But kindly, you know, it's mostly nuns and half lay teachers. But it took me a long time to learn English. And but Miss Nicholson always had a great faith in me. You know, she thought I had, you know, I wasn't quite so stupid.
There was something in there.
Yes, that's right, yes. And so I mean, she must have been an incredible role model because, you know, I mean, really, most of the women that I had met in my teens or even, you know, slightly later as a young adult seemed to me the most independent people I'd ever met, in fact, you know. My father died when I was very young, so I grew up with my mother and my sister. My sister was much older, but we spoke Italian at home, and as I said, I found it difficult to learn English, but eventually did.
And so what brought you to the Slade?
Well, that I had, due to this wonderful Margaret Nicholson teacher, she knew somebody at Goldsmiths Art School, as it was then. It's not mm-hmm. as it is now, rather sort of kind of provincial art school. And she persuaded me to apply for a grant, which I finally got after working for a year and a half in an office in Bishopsgate, you know, pushing a typewriter, that sort of thing. And I applied for this grant and got it. So I went to Goldsmiths, and there was there 5 years, no, 4 years. And there also I met Kenneth Martin, who had a really great influence on me and my work. And he got me into the Slade. In fact, it was the Slade's first intake of postgraduate students. So in all, I spent 4 years at Goldsmiths and then 2 years at the Slade, which were supposed to be the two-year postgraduate, and then I got another postgraduate year. So, you know, all in all, I spent quite a long time being a student.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Where did you go after the Slade, after your stint as a professional student?
No, I had a travelling scholarship, Rome and Abbey one, which I think he was supposed to go to Rome to imbibe the culture there, but I went all over Greece and travelled in, you know, the terrible sort of clapped up sort of, you know, steamers going from island to island. So that was fantastic. I went from the Slade. I managed to get again through Kenneth Martin. He got me a 2-day teaching there as a tutor to the first year students. And I was there for a number of years, 5 or 6 years. I also worked in other art schools, as one does.
Well, it seems to me also that since 1970, you have almost continually shown and taught for most of that time.
Yes.
I did notice, and forgive me if I'm prying, don't answer if you don't want to, but I did notice that there was sort of a gap between sort of 1985 and 95.
In what?
In showing. So.
Oh, yes, that's right, yes. I had shown for 17 years with Angela Flowers, that she was then, of course. And then I wanted to concentrate on what I was doing. These are the figures and light paintings that you'll see in the show, the red and green. Mm-hmm. And I spent about 12 years, focusing on this series. And then there was another series after that. And then I had started having shows, elsewhere. Also kept on having shows with the Flowers Gallery.
Yes. Because you have had... as I was saying, you've almost continuously, except when you were delving into this world, that you have had, a lot of recognition.
Oh, I've shown quite a bit, and they've been, the work has been written about quite a lot. And Sarah Kent, has been a great support of my work right from the beginning. We were at the Slate together. In fact, and
as you say, a small world.
yes. And then I had a big show at the ICA when she was exhibitions manager there. So Guy Brett and Sasha Craddock. Yeah.
And there's a publication out about your life by Sasha Craddock.
That's called A Survey by Sasha Craddock. Jean Mazzero, A Survey by Sasha Craddock. 2001, Lund Humphreys publication. Quite a big publication. Might want to have a look at it.
Which brings us to the present date, in brief, sort of galloping through, but brings us to the present date, and as you say, the current show with Sandra Higgins, called Invisible Cities, Mayan Journey.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
Well, the visit to the Maya sites was with my greatest friend, my boyfriend, and he was very interested in the Maya history. This was 1976, I think, or seven.
Okay.
Yeah. So not so much then was known about how the Mayas tribes, wiped each other out, but, there were all sorts of speculations. But anyway, we travelled very cheaply on local buses and, by mule and foot, as it were, and went to quite a number of Maya sites, first in Mexico and then Guatemala, of course, which has the most spectacular one, Tikal, Palenque, and also Belize, which was then still, I think, an English protectorate.
I think it was, very tiny.
That's right. And there was a sort of warship in the bay, which I think it was an English one. We had got into the country quite by mistake without a visa. We didn't know we had to have one. We were fingerprinted and all the rest of it. But there, as I mentioned in my notes, we were followed by a CIA man disguised as an anthropologist. And of course he wasn't. I mean, he didn't know, he couldn't recognize any of the sites we talked about. We had supper with him one time. And then, we lost him eventually. And then we went up to the Yucatan and saw some more important sites like Uxmal, Chichen Itza.
How did that seep into your work?
I was fascinated by the idea of these cities that had been buried or lost, in the jungle, is now overgrown, and the places which had once been sacred, very much like Palenque, it still had that atmosphere place, and how, these temples became overgrown and there'd be layer upon layer upon layer. The earlier ones sort of collapsed and then the later ones would be built on top of that and then the jungle would take over and then, this kind of layering in time, this evolution of how things changed. And when I came back, I made a whole lot of paper, reliefs out of paper and canvas. And, again, about layering and light and shade, because the light was fantastic in Mexico and Guatemala. But and then the paintings that you'll see in the show, which I called on my website Figures and Light, but in fact they came out of this visit to the Maya sites, and a lot of the paintings have names of Mayan sounding names which could have been real but were not. I made them up. So that was really it, the fascination of things that once existed, the cities that once existed.
And I find that very interesting, because places that were unthinkably, inexorably, and absolutely sacred, to the point of death.
Yes.
That now are just, it'd be difficult to find.
Yes.
If we didn't value them in some way.
Of course, yes.
They'd be completely gone, if it were... that we kept them. And it sort of reminds me, just being in... something came to mind in Budapest, and they've taken all the Soviet statues down and they've put them in one park. It's just sort of a strange, where are you in time in that moment,
With
them all together.
I see, yes, of course. Yes.
So, yeah. So that did you feel really betwixt times yourself when because it seems like if you're soaking up this incredibly potent atmosphere, this, where are you?
Yes. I certainly didn't see myself as a, not so much as an outside spectator. Because it was really moving, going from site to site, and also how the local people lived. You see, there was one place, Santiago Atitlan, on the beautiful Lake Atitlan, up in Guatemala, very high up, and the women there were working at looms that they must have used 2,000 years ago, weaving those beautiful red-coloured cloths that they wore also.
Mm. And so that's continuous. That's one of the things that's continuous.
Yes, and the huts, which were, I suppose, mud the Indians lived in. Yes, it was like going back in a way, many, many years, but totally different to anything I'd ever seen or known.
And it sounds like it's still very, very present for you.
Oh, it is. It is, yes.
Have you ever gone back?
No, I'd love to, but it wouldn't be the same, because then, we travelled in the most primitive way, which was fantastic, actually. Mm. But I'd love to see the sights again, and soak up the atmospheres.
Yes, absolutely.
You can rely on Radio Gorgeous.
No, I was going to say, I thought it was a fantastic idea to give them the names that Italo Calvino uses in his Invisible Cities. I know about Chinese cities and your take on Marco Polo, but I thought it would suit this very well because they are, you know, they suggest ideas about cities.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's sort of an urban planning.
You could look down.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Sort of not topographical, although there does feel like topographical elements.
It does, yes.
To them
yes.
as well.
A lot of my paintings do after this and before this. Oh, yes. You
right.
could look down from a satellite, you know, onto mm-hmm. this landscape. And of course, I'm not a landscape painter, but the idea of these strange formations, you know, and crevices and lights and shadows and valleys and has always attracted me. I'm sure that's Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, coming back. Yeah,
The top one is called Spiderweb City.
Yes, and it does. That's the image that Sandra's used for the show, and it is very much this, like a spiderweb, and it's central.
That's right.
You know,
yes,
around yes. a central area, and it's hard to even see your work in such
oh, yes.
tiny know. Spurts and lines of color.
Yes, I use small brushes, rather like drawing, and this is acrylic.
Right.
And, they're very brilliant colors, Liquitex. And yes, I like working, you know, so that the whole thing accumulates, you know, like putting things together bit by bit. And I do a lot of drawing, which is a starting point, but, you know, obviously the painting then changes from the drawing and the scale and everything, the colour.
And the texture.
The texture, of course, which is very important, because if you look closely, I make the priming, I do the priming myself. And I apply the primer with a roller so that you get a texture rather like mm-hmm. canvas.
Yes, yes, it's quite a matte
yes.
texture.
Yes.
Then on top of which you're layering
yes.
these tiny, tiny
yes.
dots
yes.
that just...
Again, layering, isn't
yes.
it? It's
yes, that's what I was saying, the layering.
The transparent colours, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which really gives a sense of depth. And it's very, in spiderweb, it is, when you look at a spiderweb, you're both looking through it
yes.
and at it.
Yes.
And you definitely get that sense.
Yes, and spiderwebs, if you ever touch them, they're very tough, aren't they?
Yes.
They won't break easily.
Yes. Which I love seeing them in the rain.
Yes.
You know, and that's a
I
bit
know.
Like that,
yes.
that it's heavy, yet light.
Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful. And Sandra Higgins, this show is also, as you were saying, part of the Year of Exchange with Mexico.
Yes, that's right, yes. And when I'm standing here looking and listening to the two of you describing it, they have a very ethereal, almost celestial feeling to them as well.
Yes.
I feel they have an atmosphere that's created like a magical conurbation. I mean, I can just feel myself walking through these crevices mm-hmm. and, you know, standing here and listening to you. I thought, oh, it really is magic. So I've visited these myself in Mexico, and I was just wondering when you were speaking earlier what they're like today, because I think Jean mm-hmm. saw them at a time when they were probably really magic.
Yes.
You were discovering them before they were discovered by the tourists,
that's right. yes.
before
definitely.
They were overrun. I mean, I think mm-hmm. some of the problem with these wonderful sites in Peru, for example, is that they're being trampled by the tourists, so we have to be very careful to protect them. And this kind of legacy is something, you know, that she's bringing forth, really, the history. She has original photographs as well that she took and her journal. So it's a very exciting, you know, kind of visual history of Mexico's past. And we're having a great response from the Mexican embassy, and all the Mexican organizations are quite excited about this show.
RadioGorgeous.com.
That what you were saying about the ruins then and now is that also there wasn't the need to protect them because mm-hmm. there weren't
right.
so many people going.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, and it's sort of like Stonehenge, when you used to be able to be so close to it,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
that you were really in
yes.
in them. And
right. yes.
we can get that experience mm. through your paintings.
it's interesting to me how landscape comes into it, because it does feel topographical and yet at the same time lateral.
Yes.
And then on your back, you know what I mean? All these different perspectives. And it changes in your mind what landscape can be.
Yes. I hope so.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I would like it very much if looking at a painting or drawing that I've made, one could go on looking at it, whoever, has it.
Yes, you could continually
Keep finding things.
Yes,
in it. Yes.
Finding new things and experiencing them differently.
And also, in a way, they draw you to go close to them, they change a little bit as you go very close to them.
Yes, well, and the color changes.
It does.
And the color intensity and density changes as you move.
Esmeralda. Well, that's amazing. I mean, it's just what you're saying. You feel as if you can walk in and out. It's a bird's eye view. Even if you were dropped in there, you could absolutely... It's an archaeological site.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could walk through them, and see all of these wonderful areas that you could explore. And it's so inviting to be dropped right in there. It just pulls you right into the canvas.
You might get lost.
Not a map.
That's great. Your titles, did you talk about your titles? Because they're imaginary titles as well.
Yes, I did.
Didn't know, because I think that's exciting. This is a city in the imagination of her mind rather than one that, really exists. So I think it's a wonderful transition from what you see to making it the magic of the individual artist.
Well, I suppose that's why they're called invisible cities in Itabo Calvino, because they're products of the imagination.
Yes.
I've always found, Jean, because this is our second show, I've always felt that it's somewhat obsessive, which I really like, because she was talking about how it just kind of grows by itself. And you see the size of the dots, these minuscule little dots. I think of Syrah or something like that. The intensity to be able to continue this is absolutely extraordinary, and you feel that intensity, I think, in the work.
Yes, and
well.
You feel to follow it through to the point at which you feel it's finished.
It.
Yes, to completion. How long does it take you?
Oh, about 3 months.
Yeah,
but it's interesting that a friend of mine, Guy Brett, who you probably know, when he first saw these and the other paintings that I made, he talked about models of endlessness. Mm-hmm. So that, in fact, was the title of a retrospective I gave, because the white is a kind of light shining through, and then the colour is a kind of screen, a screen of colour, transparent. Mm-hmm. Layers and clusters of colour that sometimes the white comes through and sometimes it's pushed back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes, like with the spider web, depending on what you focus on, it changes.
Yes.
For you, depending on, the perspective that you're looking at it with.
Yes. And how the more dense areas, the eye kind of travels less slowly, and then the more transparent ones, you go across the painting faster.
Looking for the next cluster.
Whatever, yes.
In search of new material. I love it. Ah, Jean, thank you so much.
Ah, thank you.
This has been lovely. Thank you very much for sharing your studio.
I think just to add that the exhibition is from the 18th of June to the 1st of July. And for more information, you can contact me at sandrahiggins.com, sandra@sandrahiggins.com, and come along and see it. It's by appointment, but we'd like to welcome you at any time.
Thank you, Sandra, and thank you, Jean.
Thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Do what you gotta do. Come on back. See me when you can. Can understand how it might be.
girl like me. I don't blame you much for wanting to be free. I just wanted you to know I've loved you better than your own kin did. From the very start, it's my own fault what happens to my heart. You see, I've always known you'd go. So you just do what you gotta do, my wild, sweet love. Ways to make you feel no good. I guess they got no way to know I've had my eyes wide open from the start. And man, you never lied to me. The part of you that they'll never see is the part you've shown to me. So you just do
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.